Welcome to the Life at Fenastra podcast. This is a podcast where we speak with the humans, the people behind Fenastra. We'll be speaking with the wonderful folks that make up the incredible global team here at Fenastra and what makes them unique not just to Fenastra, but to the world. My name is Karan and I'm the video producer for Employer Brand here at Fenastra, and I'll be your go-to guy for this podcast. Authenticity is a word that's thrown around a lot these days, but it's never made more sense than after the conversation that I had with Isabel. Isabel Fernandez is the EVP of Lending here at Fenastra. And we spoke about what it means to be unapologetically yourself when we talk about it in the context of Open Together here at Fenastra. It really drives home the idea that you are able to be yourself truly, who you are fundamentally at your core here at Fenastra. This was the amazing conversation that I had with Isabel Fernandez. Welcome to Isabel, to the Life at Fenastra podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Why don't we start with a little bit about who Isabel is?
Well, thank you, Karan, and it's an absolute delight to be on your show. You have a great reputation for bringing podcasts together, so I'm really delighted to be here. So who am I? First of all, I think that's probably a lifelong question for all of us, who we are. But if you just think of it in a nutshell, forget about my role as a professional. I'm a Spanish-Dutch mix woman who's been raised around the world, and I've seen myself as somebody who's a serial optimist, loves life a lot, and someone who's always curious about tomorrow. My fundamental belief is tomorrow always has a chance of being better than today, and that's kind of how I work and how I live my life. I'm a family woman. I have a mother of three, and I'm married to a Dutch husband. And it's kind of me in a nutshell, but pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. That's I'm excited to kind of get into a little bit more about who you are. But I want to kind of talk about your story so far. Like, what's led you to this point? Where did you start? And kind of, can you talk us through a little bit about your journey so far?
Yeah, I think we all are at this stage of our lives, and I'm 55, by the way, Karan. We're all, the results of everything we've experienced, right? And in my case, I was brought up, as I said, Spanish father, Dutch mother, grew up in South America, the United States, and then Europe. And by the time I was 15, I'd had 8 different schools on 3 different continents. And it's made me quite the person who I am today, partially this curiosity and the comfort with change that I mentioned, but just also someone who's kind of been dropped in different environments and had to adapt. And it's one of the reasons why I'm so excited to be part of this cultural journey, because that is what you need to figure out, is how do you adapt and how do you welcome other folks who might be dropped into your environment. So yeah, exciting journey so far.
Absolutely. And I want to touch on something that I noticed on my research journey, if you will. And one of the things was, well, two things actually. One was, you have a master's in law. I'm curious to know kind of how you made the shift from that to kind of what you're doing now.
Yeah, I not necessarily very proud of it, but when I went to university at the age of 17, I honestly didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. And I just picked law because it had the reputation of being a very good education.
Right.
And I never regret the fact that I've studied law. I still think it's a very good profession. Yeah. It's just that at the end of that, when I did an internship, I just realized I just didn't want to be a lawyer for the rest of my life. And I'm in awe of lawyers. I have great friends who are all lawyers, and just it wasn't for me. So then I realized I had to retrain from scratch. And that's how I started in a financial institution, in a bank, and literally had to learn how to, in a branch and do the regulatory training and learn how to, understand risk. Yeah. And so that's how I effectively got retrained into financial services. And that's where the remaining 3 decades of my career so far have left me.
Nice. The second thing is that this was completely random, and I didn't even realize this, but you're certified to be a private pilot?
Yes and no. The answer is yes. I got my private pilot's license, and then I let it expire because I moved from the United States to Europe. If you take somebody like Simon Dowler, who is an incredibly accomplished pilot on our ELT,
right.
He will not consider me a pilot. But I did the training. I will, when I have more time, go back into it. I think it is awesome. There's something very special about flying. And I loved when I did the training, but life kind of got in the way. I'm sure many of you guys recognize that, right? Life 100%. Tends to get in the way of stuff.
Yes. Wonderful. Okay. So can you talk about kind of a little bit about how you identify? I think that's such a fundamental part of, I guess, who we are as humans. And not many of us often, I guess, think about how we identify until we're asked that question. So how would you identify?
Well, I mean, you know, in the basic sense, it would be she, her, hers, right? I mean, that's kind of how I grew up. But if you think about fundamentally how I culturally identify, which I find is really profound.
Yes.
I've realized I'm a European. That's an easy thing to say, given the fact that I have a Spanish father and a Dutch mother, but a European, meaning I find myself very comfortable in many European countries, very at home. And I don't know how to explain that. It's just something how you feel. Yeah. I have had enormous pleasure living in South America and the US. And I don't discount maybe someday or maybe even live in Asia or Africa. But but really, that's really that mix of cultures is what's really embedded in who I am. And it has made me someone who's conscious of other cultures.
Of course.
Because the Spanish and the Dutch cultures are very different.
I'm curious to know the ways you identify, like how that's affected your career journey so far. Like, do you find has had a big hand in how you kind of progress in your career or not so much?
Oh, enormously. I mean, think about my last name, Fernandez, which has been the name that I've been using all my career. Yeah. My husband has a Dutch background. So you come across countries where your last name has potentially might be bit bias.
Absolutely.
Then I'm a woman. Clearly raised in a man's world, you can imagine 30 years ago in financial services. And I had role models who were kind of different to who I think I am, female role models. So I had to be my authentic self. So that mix of stuff, being a multicultural woman in a financial services environment, is absolutely shaped who I am.
Interesting.
I'm proud of it, by the way, Karan.
Yeah, no, and so you should be. I think that is, like, someone like myself will never understand the difficulties that women will face in not just a workplace, but in general everyday life. And I think it's so interesting to always get an insight, right? And just an understanding of what it means to be, I guess, a woman in this world.
Let me tell you a little secret there, Garan, right? Because it's not all negative. So sure. I'll tell you something funny. Pretty much most of my career, I'm also quite short. I'm not a very tall person, right? So it's not as if I walk in as models, if you will. But so all of my career, pretty much, I have been underestimated in the environment. And that just comes with the territory, right? I mean, not very tall, you know, woman, you know, people come in, they will probably underestimate you. It has been fabulous for me because nothing better than having low expectations. Imagine going into a negotiation with a client and they underestimate you, or going into an environment where people think I probably will not achieve. It's really set me up for a lot of success.
Yeah.
So I haven't felt that to be a huge impediment. It's just you have to realize it. You don't come in necessarily with a lot of people giving you the points up front. You have to.
Yeah. Learn. No. Of course. And so on that, you said you haven't found it to be a huge, I guess, hindrance in your career so far. But can you talk about the challenges that you have experienced and maybe any obstacles that you have experienced along the way? I guess not just from your cultural identity, but also, I guess, as being a woman as well.
Yeah, I mean, so I've in my career, I've made certain choices, and maybe again, coming back to being an optimist, I always felt that worst that can happen is that I can fail miserably and I have to go back to where I was and pick myself up. Yeah. So, you know, you have to kind of put ego aside. Absolutely. But because of that, I've taken risks in my career and they've served me well. I've had a lot of luck and a lot of people around me helped me with that.
Yes.
And so generally speaking, I was always a minority, whether it was a minority from a, let's say, gender perspective or minority from my background's perspective. Yeah. And there is something about minorities that if the size of the minority is not large enough, you tend to have to adapt. By the time you get to this kind of third that people tend to talk about, 30% or so, there's sufficient minority mass in the minority that you can kind of be yourself. Yeah. But I've somehow signed a bit of a moral contract with myself that I was always going to be my authentic self. Either you accept me the way I am or you don't accept me. I'm not going to care about that.
Absolutely.
And that kind of pigheadedness, if you will, has served me well. And so a lot of obstacles I found because of biases or and biases are not, by the way, always gender related. They're not always, you know, culture related. They might just simply be because people have worked together for a really long time and you're the odd one out and the new kid on the block. But just not having that bother you and focus on your own strength in the long run, that works really well. The only thing that I found the most challenging, Karan, is the fact that if you're in an environment that is not data-driven, where so then bias has a much bigger foothold. And because people talk about, hey, that's a good guy or a good girl, and let's promote them on the basis that they're just my buddy. And so data has been my friend, being able to show why I perform or how I performed. So as I run my own business, I'm quite data hungry because I think it just is a better way to informing you than just going by the general opinion, because bias comes in really, really quickly.
Yeah. And I want to kind of touch on something that you mentioned here. And I have to disagree with you at one point. You said about yourself when you've signed this moral contract and you called it your being authentic self a bit of pigheadedness. I don't believe it is. I think it's important to set boundaries with ourselves and tell ourselves we're going to do something, right? And be unapologetic about it. And that's one thing I found about Fenastra. When I joined, I found that I didn't have to be anything other than who I am. And I think having those morals where you kind of are so accepting of yourself, that passion kind of spreads to people around you, right? It's almost like, this is who I am, accept me or not. And most of the time it's people do accept you. So yeah, I wouldn't call it pigheadedness.
Times have changed, but I remember about 20 years ago, I got a piece of feedback from a very senior person.
Yeah.
Obviously a male, but a very senior person who said to me, Isabel, when the wall is green, act green. It's effectively assimilate or shut up, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, those were the days. Now it's a bit different, right? People don't expect you to just to act green just because the wall's green. But I thought it was an interesting one, and it, you know, don't hold it against the person who said that, but
no.
Typical of those days.
Yes. No, I agree. I'm kind of going back to authenticity as well. The I guess the mantra, if you will, of Fenastra, the DEI mantra is being open together, right? To me, that says authenticity. That means, like we've just been talking about, being who we are. What does it mean to you?
Well, you know, let's split it into the two pieces, right? Number one, open. I mean, I absolutely fell in love with the open by default statement of Fenastra.
Yes, yes, yes.
And because if there's one thing that brought me into this company, is it's that.
Yes.
Because so few companies in the world will honestly practice what they preach and be open 100%. By default.
Yes.
So many companies try to build a mousetrap that they put their customers into never to leave, or their employees for that matter. So I love the openness. Open has huge implications. Open means how you design for dependency, how you make sure that you accept others and allow a win-win.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it was just open and not together. Then we potentially we'd all be a, not a very cohesive set of people within Finastra, being very open, but not working as a team. And so that togetherness implies acceptance of other people. It means working as a team, listening to other people's views. It means just making sure that in all openness and the ability to say and act yourself, you also allow for other people to say and act how they are, and then you together figure out a way to work. And that sometimes means a compromise, right? Mm. Sometimes means just entirely giving in on something and going with one idea. And sometimes it means taking your own idea and being able to run with it. So it has quite a lot of implications in my mind.
Yeah, no, I like that. And if I can go back to a little bit about you, and we're talking about your heritage and kind of what, I guess, what being Hispanic, right, being part of the Hispanic heritage, what that means to you and kind of how you approach balancing that and your Dutch identity, because I think that's particularly interesting. When I think about myself, I'm a British Indian guy living in Canada, right? I don't know where I belong right now. I've got these three different things that I'm trying to juggle. So I would imagine, you've had your own fair set of questions in your head. So yeah, please tell me.
Well, I mean, first of all, let me tell you something funny. I celebrated all during my childhood the liberation from the Spaniards. So I would go to school and I'd come home and I'd have a day off the next day and I'd tell my father, I'm so excited because we're celebrating how we got liberated from the Spaniards. I celebrated that in South America. I celebrated that in Holland. So it's kind of funny. But I was saying before that Spanish and Dutch cultures are quite different.
Yeah.
And there are things to be super proud of on both sides. And I try to pick the best that I find.
Nice.
And try to learn from that. So what I absolutely adore about the Spanish culture is a phrase that says, the friends of my friends are my friends. So this is an approach in life that if you're being introduced to somebody new and they come in through someone you know, that it's acceptance by default. That's very different from the Dutch culture where you have to prove yourself regardless of how you come in or who you come in through. So I absolutely love that warmth of the Spanish Hispanic culture. It's very relationship oriented. Family is incredibly important. It's just a very warm culture. The Dutch culture has enormously positive things as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the Dutch are traders by background. Their people are fearless and curious and want to, go around the world and meet new things and explore. The Dutch are notoriously direct, which has positives and negatives. But I try to pick from on either side. And I'll give you one other example. So in Spain, it is very normal if you want to do business with somebody that you might first go out for dinner with them.
Yep.
Many Mediterranean cultures will recognize this. So, under the idea that you wouldn't do business with someone who you do not personally like. So you invest in that.
Yeah.
Dutch would find that very odd. They don't have a really big dining culture anyway, but they would find that very odd. Why would you mix business with pleasure?
Yes.
And why would you go? Why do you even need to like somebody to do business with them? Very interesting, very, very different, ways of operating. And as I said, I try to pick the best of both sides.
It really takes the it's not personal, it's a business thing to a whole other level, doesn't it? And so I really like that, because it's, I think, even in life, when you think about, I don't know, let's use myself as an example again, I guess. Growing up, I grew up as a Hindu, And you start to realize, like, you start picking out things that work for your life. And you start thinking about, okay, well, does this fit with the life that we're living today? And it's incredible when you start thinking, like, mindfully about these things, that it just makes a whole difference of how you approach everything in life. So, I appreciate that.
There's a book that I want to promote because I read it a couple of years ago, and I want to reread it because I thought it was so good. It's called The Culture Map, and it's by Aaron Meyer, and it talks about how, you know, it's something along the lines of decoding how people lead and execute or get things done across different cultures. And it's really interesting. It points out these differences in culture. So I'd recommend anyone to read that, The Culture Map by Aaron Meyer. It's a very interesting book.
So kind of going back to your, the culture here at Fenestra, I guess in your opinion, and I guess based on the things you've experienced, how do you think we could take part in building a more inclusive culture, or continue building a more inclusive culture, not just here at Fenestra, but kind of in any workplace?
Well, it's a huge question, obviously, right?
Yes.
Trying to solve world hunger. Well, I'll give you a couple of examples of what I've done so far that may or may not have helped.
Sure.
So the business that I run today has about 1,700 people in it. And they're spread across the globe from Portland, Oregon, to Sydney, to Manila, to London. It's just literally across the globe.
Yeah.
But out of the 1,700 people, we have about, over 800 people in India.
Yeah.
And I found it really astonishing, if you have that number of people in India, that the leadership team that I inherited didn't have anybody who was based there.
Yeah.
For me, it was kind of interesting, right? Yeah. I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah.
And so one of the things I did is I recognized that we had an outstanding talent by the name of Veena Rao in India.
Oh, yes.
And she now runs a global business for me of nearly 1,000 people. And she's based out of Bangalore.
Yeah.
And I think what that does helps, besides the fact that Veena is completely capable for that job and just a phenomenal talent.
Yeah.
She happens to be based in Bangalore. She didn't get the job because she was based in Bangalore, but she happens to be based in Bangalore. She happens to be a female.
Yeah.
And I think she happens to therefore also be a great role model for our people in India. So that's a small example of how you include communities that might not feel as represented.
Yeah.
And so that's how I try to do what I do. And I, that's just one small example. But it's a journey, Garan. It's a journey. Yeah. It's not something we fix overnight.
No. And I think you're right. I think there is, I know I asked that question, but there is never an easy answer, right? I think it is something that takes time. Okay. So closing questions about you. What advice would you give when you think about kind of yourself at the beginning of this journey of yours? What advice would you give to yourself?
Well, again, that's a bit of a hard one, right?
Yes.
First of all, I'm not somebody who has a lot of regrets. So it's not as if I'm not thinking, oh, if only I was my 22-year-old self, I would have done X, Y, Z. Yeah. But I think, just explore and network and just be even more than I was curious about new things. Try things on. I've done a lot of cool stuff in my career. I've taken a lot of leaps in my career. I probably would have done that even more so because there's just very little downside.
Yes.
And in general, a career tends to be made on the back of two things. We all get opportunities.
Yeah.
You just have to spot them.
Yeah.
And then once you spot them, you have to grab them. So if you think about being a 25-year-old and looking out at the world, number one, can you see opportunities, right? What's coming past you?
Yeah.
What are questions somebody says, hey, are you interested in so-and-so? Recognize them as opportunities. And then second one, grab them. Grab them with both hands. It doesn't really matter. Think about what's the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah.
The worst thing can happen is that you fail miserably.
Yes.
You have to brush yourself off. Start from scratch And then your one experience richer. So very few things, career choices, have devastating consequences.
Yeah.
In reality, most of them, when you try them, have very positive consequences.
I love that. It's the concept of failing forward. I've heard that a lot here, and I love it. Okay, last couple of questions. So if there's one thing people should take away about Isabel, what would that be?
Change agent. I'm right. Just not a shopkeeper. I'm not somebody who can be comfortable with the status quo. And that can be quite scary.
Yes.
Because it means that when you're working with me, you're always on this forever and ever changing thing. But for me, change is the one constant in everything I do and everything I experience. And and I'm very comfortable with it. That's not for the sake of change, but because I do believe that we can shape a future that is just even more exciting than today.
Isabel, thank you so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you for speaking with us. I have truly learned a lot today. Thank you so much, Isabel. There you have it, guys. That was Isabel. Thank you so much.